muted.
Hello, and welcome to the FirstGroup Analyst Conference Call. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards there'll be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, the conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present Tim O'Toole. Please begin the meeting.
Thank you. Good morning, and thanks for joining us on this conference call to review the DST's decision to award the Southwestern Rail franchise to our joint venture with MTR. I'm joined on the call by Matthew Gregory, our CFO, and I should just point out that the two of us are not in the same location, so just bear with us when we get to the Q&A. We shall be speaking to the summary slides that can be found in the Reports and Presentation section of our investor website before opening up to questions. So let me start by saying, obviously, we're delighted with today's news. We put together a bid that was based on quality, that is, improvements in every aspect of the passenger's experience. We believe that approach, combined with the realistic growth assumptions underpinning our bid and the DFT's efficient allocation of risk and sensible bonding requirements for this franchise, will produce a great outcome for passengers, taxpayers, and us. You'll see on page three, we've set forth basic facts about the franchise, with which I know you'll already be familiar. This is a significant franchise with a huge commuter base, but also substantial leisure and long-distance services, and we are delivering improvements for all of those markets. I want to direct your attention to the following pages, where we summarize the improvements we shall deliver for the traveling public. It starts with a significant uplift in capacity for the commuter market by way of the introduction of 750 new state-of-the-art carriages that will mean a 30% increase in seats for the peak at Waterloo. We're also shortening journey times across the network, reintroducing regional services, and increasing the frequency of services. On page five, you can see the many other benefits for passengers we'll be delivering, starting with flexible ticketing, simpler smart ticketing, and a seamless delay repay scheme. Passengers will also have the benefit of an app that can bring all of those features together in one place, along with travel and planning information. We'll be improving stations, car parks, community engagement, and introducing the country's biggest rail operator apprenticeship scheme. Matthew will now provide more detail on the franchise process and terms. Matthew?
Thanks, Tim. As you know, on this bid, we partnered with the highly respected transport operator MTR and have set up a joint venture to do so. The JV is owned 70% FirstGroup and 30% MTR, and as a result, all costs, risks, and rewards will be shared on that basis. We will be reporting 100% of the P&L and cash flow of the JV in the FirstGroup consolidated accounts, with MTR's share being reported as non-controlling interest. This is in line with what we've done in the past. From a process perspective, we've managed and ran this bid in the same manner as our previous bids, albeit with the addition of MTR's expertise alongside ours at each step of the way. Significant modelling and sensitivity analysis was undertaken, as you'd expect, with a rigorous governance process to stress test and challenge our plans. The bid was also reviewed and approved independently by each partner's board. In line with previous processes, the DFT has assessed this bid based on a combination of price and quality. The quality carried a higher weighting than in some recent bids. Looking at the key franchise terms, this is a 7-year franchise starting from the 20th of August 2017, with the option to extend for 11 months at the DFT's discretion. In this franchise, we will be on revenue risk, but the franchise does have what we believe to be reasonable protection in the event of movements in exogenous factors. This protection is both on the upside for the DFT and the downside for us and provides better risk mitigation than seen in recent times. These mechanisms apply to both the movement in GDP and also Central London employment from a fixed baseline throughout its life. As you'd expect, the franchise has a profit share arrangement in the event of significantly higher margins than expected, and overall the total premium paid over to the government will be £2.6 billion in real terms. Moving on to the franchise's financial commitments on page 8, the structure is in line with recent awards, and the amounts that the JV is expected to provide are as follows. A shareholder loan of £30 million must be paid into the franchise. This is to provide a minimum funding level as the franchise starts up, and this gets paid back during the life of the franchise. The JV parent companies must provide £88 million of contingent loan facilities to fund the franchise in the event of significant cash shortfall, and of this, 50% must be backed by bonds. A performance bond of £15 million must also be provided. Finally, the franchise is required to provide a bond to cover the cash received from season ticket payments, and this is expected to be in the region of £80 million. All of the above amounts are stated at the 100% franchise obligation, and FirstGroup and MTR will provide separate bonds in line with the 70-30 split. Despite differing treatment of rail income and bonding by our rating agencies, we do not expect any adverse impact to our credit rating. Indeed, this should be positive. Moving on to our assessment of the financial returns of this franchise, we're expecting to achieve margins comparable to the recent overall industry average. Cash flow after CapEx is expected to be slightly positive in year one, and thereafter cash flow should largely track operating profit over the course of the franchise. As ever, the timing of capital expenditure may affect that relationship in any one year. Of the capital invested, about £80 million will be funded directly by the franchise, and this mainly relates to investment in stabling, gate lines and car parks. These projects will drive improvements to the service and will also benefit from a residual value at the end of the franchise. Finally, we expect a working capital inflow of approximately £100 million during the first year or so, principally related to season ticket money. And as a reminder, season tickets are treated as restricted cash. And with that, I shall hand you back over to Tim.
Thank you, Matthew. Finally, we've included a franchise timeline. I just want to make 2 points about this. First, you'll notice the Waterloo improvements will be virtually complete when the new franchise starts. The extra capacity at Waterloo that will be delivered in 2018 with the addition of the platforms from the old international part of the station will not involve significant interruptions to service to the station as a whole. The second point I'd make is how quickly we'll be delivering the franchise improvements, starting in 2018 and a whole second batch in 2020. Let me conclude by noting we are subject to the usual standstill period and CMA review, but in the meantime, we continue to work with our partner MTR on preparations. Rail has been an important part of our business since privatization, and we have a track record of delivery that compares favorably to anyone in the industry. So we are pleased that the patience and discipline we've shown in restocking our portfolio has been justified with this franchise award. And with that, Matthew and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw that question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. There will be a brief pause while questions are being registered. And our first question comes from Gerald Koo from Liberum. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Morning all. A few questions for me. Firstly, you talked about, realistic growth assumptions. I was wondering whether you could give an indication as to what sort of average revenue growth you've assumed over the life of the franchise in the bid and sort of how that compares with the total increase in capacity. I think you mentioned 30% in relation to the new trains. Secondly, obviously you did mention that the franchise, you take over the franchise, I think, in the middle of the three-week blockade at Waterloo this August. I mean, what measures are you putting in place to sort of mitigate that risk? Clearly, that feels like quite a challenge. And finally, are there any commitments in terms of transitioning to driver-only operation within this franchise?
Okay, thank you. I'm going to let Matthew comment on the growth assumptions, but I would just say, by way of introduction, that you could tell by the timing of when we put this bid in that we were very cognizant of current economic conditions facing the rail industry, with the Brexit vote, et cetera, but we also have the benefit of the protections. And we also note that, you know, so much of this franchise was based on quality, because I think there's an appreciation this has been a very stable franchise, and you're not going to be looking at some giant step change in volumes here. So I think that our assumptions are actually quite sensible. Matthew, you want to comment?
Yeah, I'd agree with all of that, Tim. I think, you know, we've set out that over the last franchise, from the period from 2007, the franchise grew at about around 6.9% CAGR. We've looked at all the economic forecasts and the information we have, and as you said, the additional seat miles that are going into that.
Matthew?
Too dissimilar from what we've seen in the past.
Matthew, the last sentence kind of dropped off, if you could just repeat that.
Sorry, yeah, I'm just going to say it's not going to be too dissimilar from what we've seen in the past.
Okay. Your other questions, Gerald. First, measures on blockade, and you the supposition of your question that we take over halfway through, that's not exactly correct. We take over in the last week. It's about a week to go in the works when we take over. We have had sight of the work that Southwest Trains and Network Rail have done to plan this out. You know, it's an excellent management team at Southwest Trains, and we have complete confidence in them that they are going to execute these works on time. And then when, you know, we move into the international terminals, most of that, those five platforms, when we bring those on, that can be behind hoardings work for the most part. And so we're comfortable that these projects are well in hand. And as far as bringing in the new trains, let me just say, we think we have so much exciting news, exciting for the passengers, but exciting for the employees as well. The uplift in service that we're going to be able to provide that's going to make their jobs easier and better. Naturally, to the extent any of these innovations, these introductions involve change to the employees, we'll consult in the normal course. The machinery of consultation is well understood. It doesn't involve this call. And just in time, we will address it. I would just point out, unless you're wondering, the bid, the ITT, did not mandate DCO operations here. And I think we all believe that we want to make sure that this is a franchise that is able to continuously serve the public, and that's our intent.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Joe Thomas from HSBC. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Morning. Congratulations on the franchise win. Just a few bits and pieces that I was hoping you could fill us in on the detail. Matthew, you referred to the contingent loan facility, which at first glance perhaps looks a little bit lower than we've seen on some of the other rail franchises. Can you just tell us what's been going on there? Is that some sort of change in DfT methodology? Second thing is the risk sharing mechanism. When does that begin? Does that begin from day one? Third thing, and this relates, I suppose, to the first question, is you said that this is ratings positive. I'm not clear how you'd get to that calculation, but perhaps you can give us some detail there. And then finally, I'm struggling to reconcile your MPV for the premium over the franchise life with what we know that Stagecoach are paying already, or at least what they've said they're going to be paying. Perhaps you could just give some sort of indication about what you're going to be paying in year one and how that moves over time.
Hey, Matthew, if you want to take those as requested by Joe.
Take all four of those. That's fine. So let's make sure I've got all those down. So the contingent loan, look, there's no particular change in the DfT methodology. I think I would say that we have been fairly vocal around the levels of bonding and loans required. And you know, I think this is reflecting the fact that the DfT have listened to that. So no real change in the methodology. I think they've just understood our comments around the high levels in the past. The risk-sharing mechanism, yep, that does come in from day one, and that's fairly clear how that mechanism works. On the ratings, I mean, clearly we're only just about to start having conversations with the rating agencies. We know how our rating agencies look at rail, and they both treat them differently. We've looked at how they've treated rail in the past, and our take is that, I think my first comment was that this would not be treated negatively, so this isn't going to have a negative impact on our rating, is where we get to, and we believe that overall it will be considered positive to the rating. But again, we'll go into more detailed conversations with the rating agencies, and we'll see where we get to with that. We're not going to get ahead of ourselves or try and assume where they're going to come come out. But again, we think that will be overall positive to us. And then on the NPV, I mean, we don't and we can't reconcile the premium to the past franchise, because this is a totally different franchise. So, you know, we both bid on the basis of the prior information, the ITT information, and this is the premium that's come from that bid. So we're not reconciling to what's been paid before. I mean, and again, we're if you look at the premium, I mean, the premium sort of grows in a relatively linear manner across the franchise. Not really wanting to get into the details of specifics in each year.
Thank you for that. I know you don't want to get into specifics of particular years, but you know, you do have this sort of lumps of capacity coming in. Does that cause a distortion midway through the franchise?
Not hugely is what I'd say on that, Joe. I think as we said before, this is more of a stable franchise, and the growth is coming in the capacity sort of relatively early on in the franchise. So I think this is a relatively linear sort of approach to the premium.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Damien Brewer from RBC. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good morning, everybody. Apologies, several questions from me as well. Just first of all, one point of clarification. You mentioned in the presentation that cash flow would reflect the operating profit after the first couple of years. Implicitly in that, are you saying effectively the D&A level in the contract is similar to the tax, or is there anything else that's missing there? Is the cash tax level lower? If you could clarify that, that would be very helpful. Second question. In a sense, I guess, looking at this contract, it looks like the ITT and the GDP and CLE dead bands would have been set at the time of the ITT, so before the Brexit referendum. So in a sense, it feels like discussion about the revenue CAGR is somewhat mute. But could you tell us a little bit more and elaborate on how those dead bands work? What's the percent dead band? And when you're out of that, how much of the revenue shortfall or windfall is made good or given back to DfT? So a little bit more detail on those would be very helpful. And then, apologies, but the third and final question. With a focus on quality, I assume there's more of an operating performance bonus and penalty mechanism within the contract. Again, could you elaborate a little bit more on that? And if you do very well and beat that, what's the maximum revenue you could gain on top of the basic, like bid? And if you underperform that, what's the biggest size penalty that you'd be payable on that? So cash flow clarification, how the dead bands work, and can you tell us how the operating performance mechanism works and what the financial risk is? Thank you.
I'll take the third one, and then Matthew can take the first two. There's nothing extraordinary about the performance regime, Damien. It's just kind of we have committed obligations. We naturally have to deliver talk on self PPM requirements. We have to hit certain MPS and passenger satisfaction scores. If we should fall below any of those marks, we would be obligated to come forward with further investment to make sure we get there. This is a regime very similar to what we've encountered in the past. So there isn't any kind of special penalty payments that of the nature you're alluding to. And Matthew, I'll ask you to take on the two first questions.
Sure. So on the cash flow point, obviously we're factoring in sort of major capex into our numbers. So I don't think there's any particular fluctuation coming from the D&A side or from the capex, which is why we think that in the first few years we can get this cash flow positive position. There aren't any differences, particularly in the cash tax and what will go through the P&L tax. So that's the issue on the, although the answer to the cash flow point. On the GDP and CLE mechanism, all I'd say on that is that the banding is narrower than we've seen in the past, and the protection, particularly on the downside, is better than we've seen in the past. But at this stage, we're not going to sort of get into a lot of detail working through sort of line by line what each of those mechanisms are. All we'd say is they're better than we've seen recently, Damien.
All right. Could you, in that respect, obviously it's quite important on this franchise. Could you tell us when you will be in a position to let us know? Will that be after the standstill and once the contract's signed? And then secondly, coming back to Tim's answer, could you tell us what the PPM requirements are then? If you can't tell us what the financial bonus or penalty could be, could you tell us some of the thresholds at which you would be triggering either a bonus or a penalty?
They rise over time, Damien, the requirements. Obviously, as we continue to bring in the innovation and perfect the operation, we have a rising schedule we have to meet.
Can you tell us what they rise from?
It's from 90 to 93.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, and as another reminder, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. And we have a question from the line of Sam Bland from JP Morgan. Please go ahead, your line is now open.
Oh, hi, I was just wondering, based on what you can see at the moment with revenue trends across the industry, you kind of allude to a sort of industry average margin over the franchise. Would you sort of fairly kind of confident in saying that that will be kind of in each and every year? There's not sort of some ramp up in profitability as the franchise goes on. And then I guess also just if you could talk about the kind of level of pricing flexibility you have in this franchise. I think, you know, I would guess that a lot of the revenue is season tickets and then for maybe regulated fares. Just wonder what kind of flexibility you've got there on pricing. Thanks.
I'll let Matthew take the revenue number, although it is a fairly steady performance. Matthew?
Yeah, that's the point. It is relatively steady across the life of the franchise. There isn't any great swing upwards, for example, on this. It's pretty flat, that margin level.
And on the pricing issue, you're right. I mean, this is such a huge commuter market that a lot of these prices are going to just simply follow the specifications of the government. But naturally, as we bring in all this capacity and want to do more with the leisure markets, you could expect to see more advanced purchase opportunities across the entire franchise than have been seen in the past. Because we will be looking to fill up the available capacity with all these new trains. And so, and we're doing things like we're making child fare discounts available to 16, 18-year-olds, which we've already announced. So we'll be looking to deliver what is perceived by the public is much greater flexibility in the pricing and the fares opportunities in almost every respect.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, and as there appear to be no further questions, I return the conference to you, Tim.
Well, thank you all very much. We want to congratulate Stagecoach. They had a great run, but things move on. This is a new franchise, new terms, and we are excited that as we and MTR get an opportunity to execute on our plans, we think, as we said, it will be a very good thing for passengers, for taxpayers, and for the partnership. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. This now concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.